Bible has a lot to say about money and poverty and those who are poor. And any time we start to venture into that conversation, we have to acknowledge where we are as we enter that conversation. We are living in a first world country. We're living in the United States of America. And even amongst a group this size, we have all had very different experiences with and relationships to money. Some of us have experienced poverty in the sense that we have not been able to pay bills. Some of us grew up in families where we didn't own our own homes and moved from place to place to place because a parent was out of work and trying to find work. Some of us have declared bankruptcy or been part of families who declared bankruptcy. We all have very different relationships to poverty, what it means, and to money. So I thought it would be helpful to start with a definition of poverty. So I took the definition that I thought was somewhat comprehensive, and it comes from the United Nations, and you can find it on Wikipedia. So here is the United Nations description of what poverty is. Fundamentally, poverty is a denial of choices and opportunities, a violation of human dignity. It means lack of basic capacity to participate effectively in society. It means not having enough to feed and clothe a family, not having a school or a clinic to go to, not having land on which to grow one's food or a job to earn one's living, and not having access to credit. It means insecurity, powerlessness, and exclusion of individuals, households, and communities. It means susceptibility to violence, and it often implies living in marginal or fragile environments without access to clean water or sanitation. So I am not a great one to speak on the subject of poverty, because according to this definition of poverty, I have not experienced much of it in my life. So I'm not here today, it's very important that you know this, I am not here today as an economist, and those of you who are economists will see that right off the bat. I am not here today as one who has had a lot of personal experience with poverty. I am here as one who is trying to make sense of what it means to follow a life that Christ led when it comes to money and people. Now, I find the Bible a little confusing on the matter of money, as I'm sure many of you do, but there are places in which it isn't confusing at all. And so one of these places is in part of the text that Marge read today, which is, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and serve money or wealth. Now, what that actually means in practical terms, we can argue about all day long. But what I want to do today is talk with you about what this particular text says we might do about poverty. Now, to enter into it, I want to refer back to the silent meditation that we read today. Walter Brueggemann is an Old Testament scholar, and he wrote an article titled "The Liturgy of Abundance: The Myth of Scarcity." And he does this beautiful job of looking at how God created the world in complete abundance. There was enough. And the first place in the Bible that we begin to see something other coming in is Pharaoh. In the Old Testament, Pharaoh has a dream that there's going to be a famine in the land. And so his response to that was to begin gathering everything that he could possibly gather. It was the first sign of hoarding that we read about. And so there were barns and barns and barns and barns of things that he filled in anticipation of the famine. And then what had actually happened, people didn't have enough, they had to come to him, and of course, he was able to extract a lot out of the people in exchange for the goods that he had been hoarding. So kind of a basic lesson in scarcity economics. The reason I think it's important to start there is that one of the things that happens with us in the United States is that we easily buy into this concept of whether we will have enough or not. So one of the things that we've been told is there is plenty of food in the world for everyone to eat. And yet we know that millions of people go to bed hungry every day. So we begin to wonder, how does that happen? How can that be? Part of that is this idea that we need to protect ourselves. We need to make sure we have enough. And so I want you to think about your individual family for a minute. How does that play out? How do you plan for your individual family having enough? Maybe you have set aside money. Maybe you have extra storage in the garage where you put food just in case. Maybe you have accounts that are all of your backup money. There are a variety of ways in which we buy into that thinking that we need to make sure we're going to have enough. And once we seem convinced that we're going to have enough, then we begin to look at what extra we might have and how we might then use that or give that. One of the things that we forget is that our concept of having enough is a concept that is based on scarcity, not abundance. Now, I know many of you have traveled to other countries in your lifetime because, after all, we are in so many ways people of privilege. One of the things that always astounds us when we travel to another country and see people who are literally living in poverty is that they don't seem to worry about money. Some of you have done that, right? You've been in communities that are so poor, you don't know how they make it, and yet there is no conversation about money, about getting it, saving it, setting it aside, making sure there's enough. In communities that live in poverty, there's something that happens that our text talks about, which is, today has enough trouble of its own. Don't worry about tomorrow. Today has enough. So what's going to happen today? Now again, for us, that kind of thinking is just crazy making. How many times did your parents say to you, or have you said to your own children, you have to plan for the future, right? We've all heard it. You have to plan for the future. And so we do. We try. Something happens with people who, because again, we sort of do some planning, but then we also do our bit of obsessing. And so enough becomes this big, instead of this big, because we want to try to cover every possible scenario. So one of the things that the Bible tells us is If we want to see God, if we want to experience God, if we want to know God in some way, we ought to go hang out with poor people. That's one of the things we read. Interesting. How is it that we can go and hang out with poor people and see God? Good question for us to consider. Another thing that we read, and I'll tell you, I mean, I'll be the first to confess. In fact, I should be on my knees as I do it. This idea that we should not worry is one that is pretty tough to live. One of the things that our text today says about how is it that we can serve God instead of serving money, it's this text. Don't be anxious. Don't worry about not having enough food or clothes or a place to sleep. Don't be anxious. God does that for the birds and the flowers. Surely God is going to provide for you. So you don't have to worry. What you need to do is keep focused on building the kingdom of God. That place where all experience equal love and dignity and worth, and where there's enough for everybody. Our job is to seek after that kingdom, to try to make it happen. But we get stuck because we are still in the anxious mode. And again, my own confession, what is my number one worry? Money. I worry more about money. Well, some days it's a tie between my girls and money. But but as they get older, money is taking a little more of a precedent. Teenage years, yeah, I probably worried more about the girls than I did about money. But it's a huge concern. And is it because I don't have enough? Not usually. It's because I worry about the future, just like many of you. What happens when you retire? Are you going to have enough money after you retire? And for those of you who are still working now, are you going to have to work longer in order to have enough money when you retire? We all do it in different ways. And so how can we get to a place where we can be content with having enough? How can we not buy into this idea that we have to save so much money that by the time we die, our kids will be taken care of forever? That's a change from many, many years ago. It's a big change. And it's one of the things that is impacting poverty today. We keep trying to set aside enough money for our families, and so less money is going to the places where literally it would make a difference in someone's life or death. When is enough going to be enough for us? So one of the things the Bible isn't clear about is there really a solution to poverty? At one point in the New Testament, Jesus says, oh, the poor you are always going to have with you, so lavish your gifts on me. It was when the woman anointed him with perfume, expensive perfume. Some people have said, well, because Jesus said the poor are always going to be with us, that means poverty is always going to be a thing. So really, how hard do we have to work? So is there a solution to poverty? We don't know. What we do know is that we are called to create a kingdom where there's enough for everyone. So I want to tell you about three things we can do, because I hate thinking about stuff like this in the abstract. It just depresses me. Well, doesn't it? I mean, it's a huge problem. I know. See, you think poverty and everybody goes, ugh, right? It's impossible to take a bite out of. So there are three things we can do. The first thing is really spend some time considering in what ways are our fists clenched and in what ways Are they open? And here's the question for you. How is your family hoarding? And what is it hoarding? Money? Goods? Time? Talent? Education? Consider that question and see if there are areas in which you might limit your hoarding some and free some things up to give to others. Second thing we can do is related to education. There is such a connection between education and poverty. We know that. And I would guess that every parent in here who has a child currently in school is involved in some way in education. And so what about the rest of us? How can we get involved as well? Literally, whether or not one child can read and write can make the difference in whether that child is going to live in poverty for the rest of their lives or not. We have 150 people in this congregation who have been through Polly's writing class. You know how to write. We have kids in our public schools here in Oakland who don't know how to write. We have principals of our Montclair schools, which again are fairly privileged. Our Montclair school principals are saying, we have kids who need extra help with writing. They're so far behind. What can we do to impact education right here? The third thing that we can do as a congregation is pull out our global vision statement. Now, this is online. You can go to our website, go to Social Justice. Under Social Justice, you will see the global vision statement. It's long, I will give you that. It is also brilliant. And it lists five areas that we want to be involved in as a congregation in making a difference in the world. And economic well-being is one of those areas. And it says things about how we might do that. So what we have to do with this is not make it a document that sits on a shelf gathering dust. Every couple of years, we need to pull it out and we need to say, what are we being called to do with this now, here? Lastly, again, we have all different experiences amongst us. There are people in our own congregation who are having difficulty paying bills. There are people in our community who come into the office saying, I can't pay my rent this month. I can't pay my phone bill. I can't pay this bill. And we have to make decisions about whether or how to help them or to refer them elsewhere. So we need to constantly be looking at how can we help those even in our midst who are worried about how they're going to feed their family this week, because there are some who are worried, and how can we continue to help those in our community who have that same concern. So again, it's taking off a bite-sized bit. How much can you bite off? Can you do one of those four things? Maybe it's just beginning to think in new ways. Maybe it's simply paying attention to how you're walking in the world right now. Are you walking with clenched fists, or are you walking with open hands? Amen.